Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Plan on flying? In order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID. Learn how to get your real ID today at tsa.gov/real ID or visit your local DMV.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to full. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Red Sox rally falls short in their first game against the Angels as they finish up 7-6, once more on the wrong side of a one-run game. The record falls to 29-33 on the season. I'm Nick the Voice, joined tonight by Jason Kelly and Chris Felico, and we are the Bastards of Boston. And remember, if you want more, you can always go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for written articles posted just about every day. Now, this game was a heartbreaker. I think that they did the worst thing a baseball team can do just before losing, and that is give us hope. It looked for a moment that a comeback was in the cards, but once more, we fall short, and I think the only thing that makes sense to start with is the major reason that happened, which was Richard Fitz. What happened tonight?
He just had nothing. He had absolutely nothing. The fastball was sitting middle when he was throwing it. The breaking stuff was just all garbage. So the Angels just kind of sat back, said, yeah, okay, we're not going to swing at the junk, and teed up the fastball. I mean, again, it sat middle. Like, that's the kind of pitch where if you're playing MLB The Show, your eyes light up and you're hammering the controller because you know you're going to hit it 500 feet. That's how the Angels felt tonight. They probably felt like they're playing this game on rookie mode. That's what it looked like. That's probably what it felt like. Yeah, he just had nothing. And I kind of consider this just a blip on the radar. Like, it sucks that you have to lose the game because of it, but we know Fitz has better stuff. He's shown that he has better stuff. So I don't know what happened, if just mechanically something was off with him or he felt off physically, but yeah, it just wasn't there. And the Angels are, you know, they highlighted it in the broadcast. They're a team that, you know, their team batting average is super low. Like, I think they rank 27th in the league in batting average, but they hit a lot of home runs. Trout can hit it out. Soler can hit it out. Adele can hit it out. Like, they have a lot of power hitters in that lineup. So when you make mistakes to a lineup like that, it's going to show.
Yeah, I mean, Fenway Park's been open for, what, 113 years now, and that's the first time the Sox have ever given up three home runs to begin the first inning against another team. So, I mean, I feel like that says it all. I don't think it's an indictment on Fitz. To be honest with you, this performance, this is more of an indictment on pitching, coaching, the manager. I mean, he clearly didn't have his stuff. To your point, Jason, he was not hitting any of his targets. I mean, Mike Trout looked like he was 15 years younger in this game. It was a recipe for disaster. And to your point, Nick, yeah, it was another quote-unquote devastating loss. But this one's even worse because it's like we've seen a bunch of games where you just got actually punched in the face and never got up. This one, we kind of got up, we wobbled for a bit, threw a couple of our best quote-unquote haymakers, and then just absolutely tumbled right back down. So it had the potential to be possibly even the best win of the year, considering where we are to this point in the season and just clinging for hope And I mean, let's face it, 6-0 down. I think all of us felt like the game was over at that point. And it literally got to a point where we realistically looked like we could win this game. And anytime it got to that point, we had nothing. So super frustrating.
Yeah. The fifth inning was a beautiful, beautiful thing. We had Romy Gonzalez tonight, two big hits. Toro even getting another hit. And despite his error early on, had a very nice defensive play right at the end there. And they kind of made me eat my words tonight. I sort of thought that if we were going to lose, it was going to be a limp offense once more. I saw the lineup. I wasn't happy. Obviously, Meyer being out of it, having Romy and Toro both at once, I really thought that that was going to be the reason that everything fell apart. But unfortunately, you know, I agree that Fitz, this is not him. He was rushed back from rehab. We know that. He started last time on pretty much, not short rest, but a short leash just because he wasn't throwing all that much down in AAA yet. And tonight, 39 pitches. I know that it was a bad first inning, but I think that the fact that he got pulled after it almost is a good sign, right? Because it's a sign that he went back and he and Cora or Bailey or whoever, they talked and they said, whatever is going on mechanically with you, it's not happening tonight. It's unfortunate that the Angels were able to, I mean, just leap on it. They were hungry for a win. They, until the sixth inning, that was the only batch of runs they scored was right there. Dobbins came out, looked good, honestly made a good case for himself as to maybe being back in that rotation. I like Dobbins. I do like Fitz. It's just a shame that, you know, alongside with Hauk and Bayo's decline, Fitz now comes out and has a really ugly outing that's just going to put another question mark on Andrew Bailey's, you know, run prevention unit. I tweeted that out before. It's really just aging badly.
Yeah, and this is another game where the people that are still complaining about Roman Anthony, look, I get it, but your anger is misdirected because this is another showcase of you have almost nothing after Garrett Crochet in your rotation. I mean, even Walker Buehler, his last start was garbage. So, you know, Brian Bale still looks like he hasn't matured. As soon as he gets runners on the base pass, he loses his mind. Between Richard Fitz and Hunter Dobbins, I don't know which guy has higher upside. I would think Dobbins probably does, but those two are kind of interchangeable. Like, Dobbins looked good tonight, but then next time out, it might be Richard Fitz who looks really good and Hunter Dobbins looks like a mess. It's just those guys are, you know, not quite ready to be full-time starters, but this is where you are. You have to live with it. So I agree with you that Richard Fitz being pulled was probably a good sign. Again, I think it was more just him going back and saying, I don't got it tonight. Hopefully it's nothing physical. Like, hopefully he didn't go back there and say, yeah, this is bothering me. I need to get something checked out. My hope is that it was just a mechanical, like he just was like, yeah, I got nothing. I got no answers. Just, I don't know what I'm doing out there. So like I said, hopefully a blip on the radar, but still super concerning to see that because that's, you know, this Angels offense is not that good. Yeah, they can hit the long ball, but, you know, it's not a good offense. So to give up six, you know, in the first inning right there, really discouraging.
Yeah, no, the reality is that this Angels offense is pedestrian at best, right? Like they do run into home runs once in a while as the stats show, but I mean, they are about as pedestrian as an American League offense gets in today's MLB. And yeah, I mean, there's a good sign that he was pulled from the game. I mean, there were some signs that you probably could have pulled him. And I think there's, I actually had the exact opposite reaction. I was frustrated. It was like, you left him in there to literally get hooked. Now, to your point, maybe he said that he didn't have it. But if it was Cora that's like, yeah, you don't have it, I would be even more frustrated if I found that out after you just let him sit there and get lit up for six runs and pretty much put the game out of reach, which we've seen so many damn times this season where the Sox let a game get out of reach and they try to crawl back. They kind of come close and they have these moments. I mean, there was two moments in this game, and I know it seems kind of crazy, but like I remember the Narvaez at bat where I thought he hit a double and then they call it back. And I'm like, man, if he could just get on base, I know it's 6-0, but it's the bottom of the first. There's no outs. Like after he just fought, and it was like a 20-pitch at bat, it seemed like it was like that could give us some life. He flies out. And then I think it was Christian Campbell. I still don't understand what happened because I got up for like a moment. And to be honest, I'm hobbling around right now. And I watched the replay. They only showed it once, but I thought they played that ball in fair territory And then he beat out the throw. And the next thing I know, he's back at the batter's box. And I'm like, all right. At that point, we were starting to make a rally. And then, of course, he gets out. And I'm like, damn. It just seemed like there were, anytime we had a moment where there could be something to kind of materialize itself, nothing happens. And then, of course, you know, Trevor Story, who was a hero in Atlanta, absolutely sucked tonight. So in clutch moments, what's new?
Back to 0-4, two Ks tonight. Overall, the team as a whole struck out 10 times. It's actually sad that that's good. You know, that's improvement, you know. Unfortunately, over on the Angels side, we only managed to strike them out 5 times. Throughout pretty much the whole team, we weren't generating a lot of swing and miss stuff. Dobbins got 4 Ks in 5 innings. Birdie ended up getting 1 K. Shout out to Luis Guerrero, who, despite not K-ing anyone, didn't allow any base runners. He looks like he could be a really nice part of this bullpen, not just this year, but going forward. Overall, there's a lot of nice things to say about certain guys on this team, and it's just a shame that we can't come out here and celebrate those after a victory and say, look at Rafaela stepping up. You know, that was a great home run he hit. That was a no-doubter. That was beautiful. I know Devers, yet again, he had a ball that was hit really towering, looked like it might have been a pesky home run, and unfortunately it broke majorly to the right, you know, right at the last second. But he had a hit tonight. He had a walk. Ref Snyder continues to just massacre lefties. But it's just a shame that we come out here once again and say this is just more of the Red Sox, another one-run loss, another game we could have won, and someone just has a total meltdown. And because of that, it has such a significant impact, we find ourselves lost. And to your point, Chris, you know, there were a few moments that looked like breaks could have gone our way, and they didn't. Two big moments. Well, Jaron Duran, the strike three, where they called him swinging at a pitch. And I mean, it looked like he held up to me. That looked like a really bad call. I don't understand how the third base, you know, ump looks at that and says, yep, that's strike three. That is a really big impact type of play. And there was, of course, that very strange, I forget which base runner it was, but caught out at second. And it looked like there might have been a challenge-worthy play. Cora called to the back room and apparently got told not to take a look at it. I don't know why you don't challenge that there.
Yeah, that was Christian Campbell hit the ball. That much I do know. I forgot who was running.
I think it would have been Rafaela then.
Yeah, it was either Rafaela, but yeah, in every replay they showed, at least on Nesson, it looked like he was about 3 feet in the air by the time the ball was in the back of the glove. But yeah, I don't know. That's another frustrating part about Cora. I do feel like this season in particular, every time he challenges a play, it's like out of desperation when it's just like clearly you're just kind of like throwing your last shot out there because you have nothing else. When there's been a couple of questionable calls in the last couple of weeks, in some critical spots where it's like, all right, like our season's kind of going down the drain. Like what's the worst that happens? You lose your challenge and then you can't use it in the ninth inning when it's a bona fide, like you're not going to get the call anyway. But yeah, it is a lot of things, but you know what they say? It's bad teams don't get calls and or their breaks don't go their way and good teams find a way. I think the Duran play, yeah, it was super frustrating, but to be fair, like he could have been called out the play before and that's probably what made it that much more frustrating is like that pitch right before was kind of questionable. He got the benefit of the doubt. And the other one, I think for sure he didn't swing if he didn't say he swung on the one before. So, but it is what it is.
I agree. I'm surprised Cora didn't challenge that. I don't know what he was told from the guys looking at the video in the back, but felt to me like it was at least challenge worthy, especially at that spot in the game, that late in the game. But yeah, this was another case of at least they fought, but it's kind of like, yeah, they fight back, they get close, Rafaela hits that home run, it's 7-6, and you're thinking, all right, 7-6, Kenley's coming in, they're familiar with Kenley, or they, at least they should be a little bit, and he completely blows him away in the ninth inning. I mean, Abreu has a feeble at-bat where he looks completely overmatched, and then it was just two quick flyouts, and boom, we're done. Like, the fight just completely went away. So, it's frustrating that, you know, they finally score more than 3 runs, and they still lose. It's like we've been waiting for a 6-run game from this offense for so long, and they finally do it, and they still lose. And it's just and still by 1 run, amazingly. It's just they can't get out of their own way. It's unbelievable.
It's a great point, Jason, is like when Kenley Jansen came out, I'm thinking, I'm like, all right, well, he's given me a heart attack for the last 2 years, so when he was on our team. So, like, if we could just get someone on, we're in good shape. And it was like, oh, that's the guy that the Sox thought they signed. Awesome. Glad now he's doing it. Now he's an Angel.
Yeah, no kidding. But you're right. You know, 6 runs on 11 hits, nice home run. Overall, I mean, 4 for 12 with runners in scoring position. We at least were able to get guys in after they got on base. And it's just a heartbreaker. But I'm glad that you brought up Willy Abreu's final at bat, because that was just awful. That was such an ugly, vain attempt, and sort of echoes back to my last appearance on the show where I was talking about guys trying to, I mean, literally swing for the fences, but also figuratively trying to swing for the fences. You put the whole team on your back and you think, I need to tie this game right now because I don't have faith in the guys behind me. You know, that's really what that shows to me. But also, as much as I love Ref Snyder and I love Ref versus lefties especially, I don't harp on about platoons quite as negatively as other Sox fans do. I think that they have their purpose and I think that they can be very effective, but it is very annoying to me to see guys like Willier not getting any seasoning versus lefties. And now, is it going to be the same story with Meyer? Because I hope not. Someone in the war room mentioned that, you know, Cora is going in with all of these great players and sort of making them into platoons, you know, whether they are or aren't. For me, I don't care what a guy did in AAA or AA. A guy doesn't become a platoon until he, for seasons, demonstrates that he cannot hit a certain handedness. I don't want Willier and Meyer, who are young, to get pigeonholed into a role player. That's not at all. I want them to get that experience.
Yeah, and tomorrow will be an interesting case because they got Kikuchi going for the Angels. So you got back-to-back lefties here. Now, I was told that the reason Meyer sat today is because he hasn't sat yet since being called up. So they figure, okay, this is a good day to give him a day off, you know, and then we'll put him back in there tomorrow. We'll see. I mean, at this point, it's we'll see because, seriously, Trevor Story, it takes a crowbar to get him out of the lineup. And we know that Cora loves Ref Snyder against lefties. So he's probably going to do something stupid tomorrow. Like, he'll sit Rafaela even after he hit a home run tonight and had 2 hits. Like, he'll sit him to get Ref Snyder in there. Put Abreu in, like, who knows? But I agree with you. Like, it's the whole his obsession with lefty righty and matchups. It goes too far sometimes, and especially when you have a young team. And this is why I think Cora isn't great with young rosters, because he doesn't want the kids to get the seasoning. Because if Willy Abreu goes 0-for-4 tomorrow against Kikuchi, Cora's going to go back there and say, well, this is why I don't play him against lefties, because he can't hit them. It's like, well, it's one game, Alex. Like, you got to let him learn it a little bit, because if he doesn't get in there, then he's never going to learn it. And with Meyer up and with Anthony eventually coming up, it's like, are you going to bench Roman Anthony against a lefty, the number one prospect in baseball? Are you going to do that? Like, knowing him, he probably will, because he's got to get Ref Snyder in there, like, or he's got to get Romy in there. Like, and Trevor Story can't come out of the lineup no matter what, because, you know, he had those 2 big hits in Atlanta, so he's coming around, guys. His season's about to turn around. Like, who are we kidding? It's just, let the kids play. At this point, your season's slipping away anyways. You might as well see what you got. If Abreu can hit lefties and he can learn that, let him learn it. Stop benching him every single time.
Yeah, I think 2 good points, one from each year. So I think to your point, Nick, I think with Abreu, I'm with you. I personally am not at the point where I think you should be platooning him. But there's like sort of enough evidence where you can kind of justify it in certain moments, which I would kind of get. But then you have like Marcelo Meyer, and it's like, why are we platooning this kid? He's been up here for like a week and a half. He's one of like the only quote-unquote bright spots on this roster at this point. And then to your point, Jason, it's like he is completely platoon heavy and friendly with this roster. And he definitely likes older rosters. But like, I think about 2018, like, what is the biggest difference? Because we had a couple of young guys on that squad and we weren't platooning. You know, yeah, once in a while we had a couple of platoon guys off the bench. And yeah, one of them did his cycle against the Yankees in an ALDS. But besides that, like, the difference was there was trust in the older guys and they were producing. Whereas now he has guys that he quote unquote trusts, but they're not producing, which is almost forcing his hand to have to do all this platooning, right? And then the crazy part is he doesn't platoon the guys that he should. Like, to your point, Trevor Story, he should be like the first guy plucked out of this lineup. nine out of 10 times at a games. And he's the last one to go. Like, literally, he'd have to lose a leg at this point to be, like, strolled off the field. And even then, I think that Alex Cora would strut him out there in a wheelchair. And I don't mean to sound insensitive, but, like, that's the reality at this point. It's super frustrating, mind-boggling, and it just makes absolutely no sense because our season, to your guys' point, is at the precipice of, like, going down the drain. What the heck is the benefit of platooning these young guys? So, like we never truly know, should they be in, like, AAA? Should they be on the Major League roster? Are they going to be the future? Are they going to be platoon? I'm at the point now where it's like, if this is what it's going to be with them, trade them for proven talent. And you know what? If they flourish elsewhere, great. Good for them. But as long as we get proven talent that could at least do something here, at that point, it's a win. But even then, I can't even trust that because we let a generational player in Mookie Betts go for absolutely nothing. So I don't even know what the answer is at this point.
Yeah, it's getting harsh, man. You know, Abreu's been having a really bad couple of weeks. Him, Campbell, and Story now, who are pretty much fixtures of this lineup, they're all hitting 169 over the last 30 days. It's just really bad. And you have Story, who has a couple of good games. And I think when we all saw that, we all sort of had the same reaction, which was, oh no, this is going to justify his continued playing. And now that we have Toro, who has proven tonight, he's not a bad third baseman. Like I said, he made the error, but a very, very nice throw from into foul territory to get a guy out. I would much rather have Meyer at short. I really want that. Give him and Campbell as much seasoning as possible. Pretty much my philosophy right now is make it a development year. But if you're going to do that, you have to develop guys. Sure, guys like Hunter Dobbins are struggling the second and third time through the lineup. Who cares? He's a young guy with some flash who maybe could turn into a very good starting pitcher. Keep using him in that role, please. It's starting to feel like we know what Bayo is becoming, which is not very good, kind of a bust, unfortunately. I want to see Campbell and Meyer and Abreu and Narvaez as much as possible. But as much praises as I've sung a lot of players, there's one name that I've been leaving out very deliberately, but it's a guy who did the most tonight. That's Jarren Duran. Two doubles. He's continuing to look hotter and hotter as the year goes on. In the last 30 games now, he's slashing 262, 297, 408. You go back to the last 15, that bumps up to 297, 343, 453. The guy's coming alive, but there's been a lot of rumors lately. Are we going to trade him? What do you guys think?
So we've talked about the, you know, sort of trade candidates from that outfield a lot. You know, Abreu, Duran, even Rafaela. You know, I know they extended him, but that's a very tradable contract. And we all know that there's someone waiting in the wings that we all want getting everyday games, you know, in the outfield, and that's Roman Anthony. So someone's got to go. And, you know, Terry has been on this show, you know, he's been on this for over a year now saying there's going to be a painful trade at some point. There just is. You can't have four outfielders, like, especially now that Rafi is locked in as your DH. So, and you still got Yoshida, you know, in witness protection, who's now throwing from 90 feet, I hear, which is a feat. So that's great, but, you know, whatever. So yeah, someone's got to go. And you would think that a lot of people say, well, Abreu makes the most sense because he doesn't hit lefties because Cora won't let him. And you sort of got him almost for free in the Christian Vasquez trade. I mean, let's be honest, that was the heist of a century. And, you know, Jarren Duran was the fourth best player in the American League last year. The only players better than Jarren Duran in the American League last year were Bobby Witt, Gunnar Henderson, and Aaron Judge. So he had that kind of year. But his age works against him. He's 28, going on 29, and he's a speedster. So once he gets to 32, what's he going to look like? Is he still going to be the same player? Or, you know, suddenly he's not stretching, you know, singles into doubles. Now it's just singles. And what if the power goes away? So there's a lot of questions with him. I don't think they're going to trade him personally. I think that he's just too much of a fixture in their lineup. And like I said, I think Cora looks at him as a leader of this team. Even though he hasn't been in the major leagues that long, I think Cora kind of looks at him as a veteran. And, you know, that's why he's like, he's not moving out of the leadoff spot. He doesn't bench Duran against lefties, you know? So Duran doesn't get that treatment. He doesn't get platooned. So I think Cora is showing you that he wants him as his leadoff hitter every single day if he can manage it. I think it's more likely that they would trade someone like Rafaela or Abreu to make room for Roman Anthony. The trouble is that Jarren Duran is your most valuable outfielder outside of Roman Anthony, obviously, but Jarren Duran is the proven talent that teams are going to want. So they are going to get a lot of calls about him. And we saw the rumors about the Padres being interested. And I tweeted out earlier, and I stand by this. If it's not Leo DeVries or Fernando Tatis, I'm hanging up the phone. I don't care. I don't want anyone else off San Diego. Like, no, it's either Tatis or that kid. And even DeVries, like, he's years away. So it might just be, are you offering me Tatis? No? Okay, goodbye. Like, that's, I think that's what it's going to come down to. So I don't think they'll move him, but they are going to get a lot of calls. And them playing the way they are and, you know, continuing to lose games and fall further back in the standings, those calls are only going to get hotter and hotter. Because other teams now are looking at you going, oh, their season's not going the way they thought it is. And they've got a number one prospect that is blocked. So, you know what? Maybe they are willing to move Jarren Duran. So, Craig Breslow, the pressure is going to get turned up a lot because teams are going to be calling about Jarren Duran left and right. And you can only hang up the phone so many times. So, I still don't think they'll trade him, but it is going to be very tough to say no to some of those offers.
So, I was on here a couple episodes ago, and I made this whole case about how it should be Willy Abreu that goes, right? Now, mind you, that was also at the time where I was still in the mind frame where I was convinced that the Sox were at least somewhat trying to win games at this point. And if they're trying to win ball games, then keeping Jarren Duran for this season and for the next couple of seasons makes the most sense to me, especially since we have a manager that is completely diminishing the trade value of Abreu. Like, let's all be honest. Even if we all got to the point where we were at the conclusion that he's definitely the guy out, what is he worth? Right? Like, we are diminishing his value, or should I say Alex Cora is diminishing his value by not allowing him to bat against left-handed pitching, right? So, like, I don't even know what we could fetch. Is it even worth it, especially in a lost season? With all that being said, at this point, if you're not trying to win, it's about the future. Jarren Duran may make the most sense to trade at this point, just from a value perspective. However, I think there's another thing that's here underlying that we're not necessarily completely looking at. Is it's going to be interesting to see out of these two guys, because I agree with you, Jason. I think Jarren Duran is a Cora guy. Cora is specifically highlighted him that he wants him as a leadoff hitter. He's one of his leaders in the clubhouse. He's clearly a Jarren Duran guy, and they have a good relationship. And obviously, I don't want to say it's contentious, but like he's not allowing Abreu to even flourish. However, I would think that Breslow, especially with his words and how this is unacceptable to this point, where we are as a season, is probably, especially with a lot of pressure, looking to make the big trade, right? Whether that's to fetch for the future or to try and spark something before this is completely lost. And we all know if that's the case, it's probably Jarren Duran who's going to be the guy that's out. We will see very quickly if something is going to materialize with or without Jarren Duran, who the brass really allows to swing the hammer. Because if Jarren Duran's gone, Craig Breslow has a lot more power than we all give him credit for. And if it is reported that Breslow wants to get rid of him, has a trade package, and we don't, then we really know Cora is running the show.
That's a great point. Duran really has become such an electric player in this clubhouse. He's become such a fan favorite, and it's always hard to move on from a guy like that. But I just don't know what we're going to do. Duran City Connect sold out in 24 hours. How do you lose a guy like that mid-season especially? It's just hard. I mean, it is a business, but it's a business that sort of revolves around X factors and intangibles. You don't know what a guy is going to do when he replaces Jarren Duran. You don't know what Duran is going to do in 5 years, really. We can project, and I agree that speed and his general tool belt sort of ages poorly. But I think what's going to happen this year, because I did look at the Padres and I looked at their system, and like you said, Jason, all of those prospects, all of those heralded guys are years out. We're in our window now. The next 5 years should theoretically be huge for us. You have Crochet at his peak. You have Devers at his peak. You have Meyer, Anthony, Campbell, hopefully all coming into their own. you have Justinson Garcia being able to come in and sort of replace Rob Refsnyder as a potential fourth outfielder. It's just hard. It's hard to think about. I've seen some speculation about, oh, well, maybe Campbell can go down to AAA or over to first base, and maybe Duran could get the Mookie treatment and go back to being a second baseman. Because much like Mookie Betts, he did, you know, come up as a second baseman and only moved to the outfield because of his speed. Maybe that could happen, but I think, unfortunately, the most likely scenario that we're going to see this year is Anthony gets stuck in AAA, maybe comes up as like an expanded roster call-up towards the end of the year, but they don't want to waste his, I think it would be age 27 season, in case he finishes second rookie of the year. That's what I've been seeing. I think that that's probably one of those situations where the MLB should maybe tweak a rule, because that type of behavior should not be encouraged, certainly. But I think we're probably just going to see this outfield of Duran, Rafaela, and then over in right field, either Refsnyder or Abreu for the rest of the year. It's a shame, because the Royals, everyone is talking about how they're making a splash. They're calling up Jack Caglione. They're calling up their big number one prospect. This is a guy who flew through the minors, 22 years old. This year, just 38 games in AA before being promoted to AAA. Only 12 games, 54 plate appearances, and they're calling on him to see what they can do. That's a team to me that says, you know what? We have a need. We're in our window. Let's chase it. Let's go hard. And I just think the Red Sox are a little too scared to do something like that, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point about the City Connect jersey, right? Because I agree. I think there's an optics to it, right? And I think that would be hard to digest at this point, this moment, to get rid of Duran with where we're at. However, in a week or two from now, if things completely spiral out of control, I do also believe this fan base is rabid enough and hungry enough to, you know, expect to be winning at this point, especially based off the offseason that we had, that the only thing that might sell better than a City Connect jersey with Duran's name on the back of it, or number in this case, would be hope. And the thing that Roman Anthony provides us right now is hope, right? It may be false hope. And to be honest with you, the statistics and the probability says it probably is more so false hope than not, because he's not a proven commodity. But nonetheless, in times of grief, hope's the only thing that keeps us going. The Red Sox are not a winning team with Jarren Duran, and haven't been with Jarren Duran, despite all of his credentials. And again, I'm not blaming Jarren Duran, that it's not an indictment on him. But it's also proven that he's not necessarily getting us over the hump at this point. Whereas Roman Anthony, well, he probably not, but at least this gives us something.
So one of my biggest issues with the team this year is that they've put so much pressure on the big three, right? Campbell, Meyer, even Roman Anthony. So if you trade Jarren Duran because your season is slipping away and you trade him off, you get a prospect haul back and you call up Anthony, now you're expecting him to replace Jarren Duran's production. And like I said, he was the fourth best player in the American League last year. He hasn't quite been trending that way this year, but he's been heating up. If by the trade deadline, Duran is an all-star and he's, you know, back to hitting close to 300, a little bit of power, the stolen bases are racking up, and you trade him away, now you're expecting Roman Anthony to be that guy and possibly more. That's a lot to ask. They're already asking Christian Campbell to learn 15 different positions, although not anymore, I guess. I guess he's not playing first base.
Down to five, Jason.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he's not playing first base because Cora lied again. That, you know, they're already asking Marcelo Meyer to, you know, to be a savior for a sinking ship. So I hate the idea that, okay, we're going to trade Jarren Duran because he gets us the most value, and then we'll call up Roman Anthony and he'll be the beacon of hope. Like, that's a lot to put on a 20-year-old kid. Yeah, number one prospect in baseball, whatever. That's a lot to put on him. Like, I would much rather they trade someone like Abreu, who Cora obviously doesn't really like anyway. I'm sure he likes him as a person. I don't think there's any, as you guys said, I don't think there's any tension between them, but Cora obviously doesn't view him as an everyday, you know, like, staple of the lineup. He views him as a nice platoon guy, can hit righties, and I like his glove, but that's about it. Another team out there probably looks at Abreu and goes, we think he can hit lefties. We think that that guy at 26 years old can be a fixture in the middle of our lineup, and we are willing to give you either a proven pitcher in return, which is what I would ideally like, or a really good prospect package. And then you call up Anthony, because at that point, Anthony's replacing a guy who doesn't play every day anyway. So it's, you know, if he struggles against lefties, you know, that's the kind of thing where you go, well, he's a prospect, you know, and he's the number one prospect in baseball, so he'll learn it. Like, be patient with him. You know, if you're training Abreu for prospects, you're basically saying it's a development year again, which it wasn't supposed to be. Don't let them off the hook for that. This was not supposed to be another development year.
Yeah, no.
They were supposed to go to the playoffs this year. So if they start pulling that crap, then seriously, like, call them out on it, because well, this is not.
And that was my point, Jason. I actually agree with you. I wouldn't do the whole beacon of hope. I just think that that's what they will try to sell us if this thing gets out of hand, because that's what any smart team would do. That's a sports franchise. Wow, this got out of control. How do we keep everyone engaged? Oh, we'll throw the kid in there because people have to watch. Even if he goes up in flames, they'll watch it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think a really good question that we all have to ask ourselves now is, how long do we tolerate this mediocrity? And this, not even mediocrity, that's actually quite a generous term at this point. We're 29 and 33. How much longer can we even entertain the idea of going out and getting a starting pitcher and competing for that wild card spot? Because right now, we would have to leapfrog the Rays. We would need to leapfrog the Blue Jays. There's four teams, good teams, over in the Central. And right now, you know, you have maybe two, maybe three teams over in the West that are all competing for just that one spot, that one division winner. And the rest of us go for the scraps. Right now, we're looking like the runt of the litter. There's the really bad teams. There's the A's, the White Sox, and the Orioles. And it's funny to include the Orioles in that, but it's true. And then there's us and the Angels. That's not a good place to be. So at this point, as much as I would love to think about a Jaron Duran trade for someone great, or a Willy Abreu trade for some help, or even something crazy like, you know, a Roman Anthony trade for a great starting pitcher, if that conversation did come to fruition, as much as I would love to entertain something like that, I'm already starting to think, man, I wonder what we could get for Buehler. Man, I hate to see Chapman go, but he's on a one-year contract. Let's see what happens there. Even Giolito, you could send to a desperate team. You never know. Teams need starting pitching. And Giolito could honestly be a decent reliever with his sort of two-pitch arsenal that's at the top of his game. It's just really tough to keep losing games and coming on here and saying, oh, man, but what can we do to fix this? Maybe not playing Story is the answer. Maybe trading Jaron Duran is the answer. But maybe there is no answer. Maybe the answer is wait for 26, and I agree. This is a development year in my heart, but it shouldn't have been. It absolutely shouldn't have been. We were supposed to win 90 to 95 games. That was what Craig Breslau said. That was what his goal was. And right now, we're looking like we're going to be lucky to win 80 to 85 games. It's bad, guys. It's really bad. So I just wanted to pull up the probable pitchers here for the rest of the series and get your guys' takes. Tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern, 7:10 rather, we have Brian Bayo taking the mound against Yusei Kikuchi. Then on the 4th, we have a 1:35 Eastern start time. It's Lucas Giolito versus Jose Soriano. Kikuchi and Soriano doing pretty well so far, but you never know what you're going to get from the Angels offense, to your point. What do you guys think this series is going to come out and look like at the end?
So I don't think there's any way you beat Soriano on Wednesday. He's their best pitcher. He's got electric stuff. If Trevor Story's in the lineup, he can literally just pump 98 down the middle and he'll strike out Trevor Story four times. That's how good that guy is. So your best chance is probably to win tomorrow. And that means you've got to put it in the hands of Brian Bayo, and that should scare the crap out of everybody. Kikuchi is also nasty. He's a lefty. So one of your favorite players is going to get set. I don't know who yet. Maybe it's Abreu. Maybe it's Meyer for a second straight day. Someone's going to sit. Cora's going to put out some stupid lineup because, you know, he's got to get Ref Snyder in there. He's got to get Romy in there. I don't know. So I'm not feeling great about the rest of the series, which I did not think I'd be saying against the freaking Angels, but here we are. I think there's a chance they can win tomorrow if Bayo comes out and can at least give you five. If Cora lets him go five, gives you five, maybe six, and doesn't completely lose his mind. But I think there's no shot you win Wednesday. So hopefully they scrape out one tomorrow. and then they'll get blown away on Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, coming off of this Braves series, and you know what? To be honest with you, like, the Braves aren't a good team this year, right? Like, let's just call it what it is. I think, you know, when we win series now, two series in a row against the Braves this season, we're like, oh, we beat the Braves because of what the Braves have been. And the reality is they're not that good this year. And we're not that good this year. And there's toss of the coin games where you feel better in some cases than not. Tomorrow's a toss of the coin where I don't feel great. I mean, I feel a little bit better that's a night game, because if it was a day game, I'd tell you we're absolutely getting slaughtered with Bayo. But I still don't feel great, but it's still a toss of the coin. I would agree with Jason. I don't think there's any way we beat Soriano. I also think, like, to your point before, Nick, Giolito shouldn't be in a position where it's like we're putting so much on a freaking Giolito to, like, salvage a series or possibly win the only game in a series, depending on how tomorrow goes. And I think he has sneaky underlying value to a team that, like, has a competent pitching staff, which is not the Sox, even though we were sold that bill of goods. But I don't feel great about the series. I would not be shocked if we got swept. Gun to my head, I think possibility we win tomorrow, but I don't think there's a shot in hell we win Wednesday.
Yeah, you know, last time I was on here, I was the optimist. It was after that game one against the Braves. I said, you know what, I think we're going to take this series, and sure enough, I was right. Always nice to get a win. I think I'm going to play the pessimist this time, and after today, it really does seem so 2025 Red Sox to go out there and get swept by the Angels. And then who knows? We'll probably bounce back and take a game or even two off the Yankees. But I think that this is just going to be another reason for us to hang our heads in shame and say, what in God's name are we doing? You know, I hate to say it, but I really do. So before we sign off for the night, I just wanted to plug the bastardsofbostonbaseball.com one more time. It's not even a Substack anymore. We got that out of the URL. Once more, it's bastardsofbostonbaseball.com. And just a few hours ago, Terry actually published an article on his reaction to the Jaren Duran trade rumors. So if you would love to read that view, I encourage you to do so. We're growing the brand. We're doing a lot of stuff. We appreciate you guys for hanging with us. We know that this is not the Sox season. We all wanted to come out here and be partying every day. It seems like out of the past 4 years, this season's almost the most doom and gloom this early on. But we'll see what happens. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.